So we are in the book of Ruth in the Old Testament. You guys ready to finish up Ruth? No? Good, because we're not going to finish it tonight. So we're close. We're getting there. But we're reading through the book of Ruth in the Old Testament. And if you're new tonight or you haven't been here in a few weeks, unfortunately, you're kind of coming in at the end of the story. So let me take just a minute or two and recap what this book has been about so that we can bring you up to speed. The story of Ruth is really about two women, a woman named Naomi and a woman named Ruth. And it's also a story about setback and loss, because it opens up with this woman named Naomi, and she lives in a little village called Bethlehem in Israel, and she experiences famine. There's a famine in the land, so there's a setback in her life, and so and her husband and her two sons decide to move to Moab, where they hear that the conditions are better. This is a neighboring country next to Israel. And so they move there, but once they get into Moab, her husband dies unexpectedly. Big setback, big loss in her life. Well, her two sons marry Moabite women, and they're married to these women for 10 years, and they try to have children, but neither of her daughters-in-law or sons, neither of them can get pregnant, neither of them can have children. In a culture where that was sort of everything, another big setback. And then both of her sons die, seemingly in the same year. Huge loss. And so Naomi hears that things have gotten a little bit better back in Bethlehem, and so she travels back to Bethlehem after 10 years of just nothing but bad news in her life. And in fact, when she gets there, the people, the women, say, "We don't even recognize her. It doesn't even look like Naomi anymore." And she says, "That's because I've just experienced nothing but pain and misery and suffering. I left with so much, and I've come back, and I don't have a husband. I don't have sons. I don't really have anything. I have no joy, no hope. God has made my life very, very bitter." Now, when we read the story, we see that Naomi comes back to Israel, not actually alone. One of her daughter-in-laws, the one named Ruth, decides to travel back with her. And yet life is going to be hard for Ruth as well, because now she's a foreigner in Israel. She's actually a Moabite, and she doesn't have anything. She doesn't have a husband. She lost him. She doesn't have sons or children. She doesn't have any food. She doesn't have any money. They're poor. They have to scrape to get by. And so one day Ruth goes out into the fields to pick up some leftover scraps, and she runs into a man named Boaz. And this man is so gracious, and he's so generous, and he says, "You can stay in my field. You can pick up some of the best grain here. I'll make sure that you and Naomi are well fed." And yet, even though this is a little bit of good news in their lives, they're still living on the margins. Things are still difficult and tough for them. In fact, they come to the point where it looks like Naomi is going to lose her land. And it seems like her deceased husband owned some land in Bethlehem, and yet now they've come back, and they don't have a husband, they don't have sons that can inherit this land, and they've fallen on such hard times that they're basically going to have to sell their land just to make it. And so Naomi comes to Ruth one day, and they come up with this plan. And they decide, because there's this law in Israel that says that there can be this person who's a relative of yours, and this person can be called a kinsman redeemer or a guardian redeemer. And what that means is whenever you fall on hard times and you have to sell your land, one of your close relatives can come in and actually have the opportunity to buy that land and make sure that you don't have to sell it, make sure it doesn't go outside of the family, and make sure someone within the family keeps the land. And so they have this idea. Well, it happens to be that Boaz, this guy who's been so nice to us, is one of our distant relatives. And so Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, Ruth, maybe if you go to Boaz and you make yourself available to him and you tell him the situation, maybe he'll actually marry you. Crazy idea. And maybe he'll redeem this land, and he will become your husband, and then you can have children, and then we'll be taken care of, and then this man can take care of us for good, and we'll have children that can inherit the land, and our entire fortune, our entire future will turn around. And so in this bold move we read last week, Ruth kind of gets crazy, and she takes a risk, and she makes herself available to Boaz, and she basically says, "Would you marry me? would you be my guardian redeemer? And Boaz says, I will. And just when we want to get excited, just when it seems like, you know, there's a nice big bow on the story and everything's going to be great and it's the climactic ending and everyone's going to live happily ever after, he says, but there's a problem. I'm not actually the closest relative. And according to Israelite law, I don't have the opportunity to be your guardian redeemer. There's another relative that's closer to you than me. Another setback, another loss in their lives. And that's where we pick up the story again this week.
Boaz went straight to the town gate where official business happened and took his place there. Before long, the closer relative, the one mentioned earlier by Boaz, strolled by. "Hey there, old friend," said Boaz. "Take a seat." The man sat down. Boaz then gathered 10 of the town elders together and said, "Sit down here with us. We've got some business to take care of." And they sat down. Boaz then said to his relative, "The piece of property that belonged to our relative Elimelech is being sold by his widow Naomi, who has just returned from the country of Moab. I thought you ought to know about it. Buy it back if you want it. You can make it official in the presence of those sitting here and before the town elders. You have first redeemer rights. If you don't want it, tell me so I'll know where I stand. You're first in line to do this, and I'm next after you." The man answered, "I'll buy it." Then Boaz added, "You realize, don't you, that when you buy the field from Naomi, you also get Ruth the Moabite immigrant, the widow of our dead relative, along with the redeemer responsibility to have children with her, to carry on the family inheritance with the family land." Then the relative said, "Oh, I can't do that. I jeopardize my own family's inheritance. You go ahead and buy it. You can have my rights. I can't do it." In the olden times in Israel, this is how they handled official business regarding matters of property and inheritance. A man would take off his sandal and give it to the other person. This was the same as an official seal or personal signature in Israel. So when Boaz's redeemer relative said, "Go ahead, buy it," he signed the deal by taking off his sandal. Boaz then addressed the elders and all the people in the town square that day. "You are witnesses today that I have bought from Naomi everything that belonged to Elimelech and Chilion and Mahlon, including responsibility for Ruth the Moabite immigrant, the widow of Mahlon. I'll take her as my wife and keep the name of the deceased alive along with his inheritance. The memory and reputation of the deceased is not going to disappear out of this family or from his hometown. To all this, you are witnesses this very day." All the people in the town square that day, backing up the elders, said, "Yes, we are witnesses. May Yahweh God bring this woman who is coming into your household like Rachel and Leah, the two women who built the family of Israel. May Yahweh God make you a pillar of Ephrathah and famous in Bethlehem. With the children Yahweh God gives you from this young woman, may your family rival the family of Perez, the son Tamar bore to Judah."
So we come to the end of the story, almost. We're not there. We're going to finish it up next week, and there's actually a surprise ending that you might not be expecting at the end of the story next week, so you need to come back for that. But as we read this part of the story of Ruth, there's three things that I just want to highlight tonight, because we've been going along and just reading the story and asking ourselves as we put ourselves in the story, what are some things we can learn from this story? And whether you're a church person or not, whether you're somebody who's been a Christian for a long time, or maybe you're just here and just checking things out and you're not even sure what you believe, I think there's three super crucial things that we can find in this story that if we see them with this new perspective, it can almost revolutionize the way we think. So let me just highlight three things. First, the first thing that you need to see in this story is that God is working in the details of our lives. That God is actually working even in the littlest details of our lives. Look at what it says in the first verse of the chapter that Lindsay read a second ago. It says this in chapter 4, verse 1. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate, and he sat down there just as the guardian redeemer he had mentioned came along. And Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over and sat down. In other words, the very next morning, after Boaz had been sort of presented this offer from Ruth, and he had said, "I would do it if I could, but I can't because there's a closer relative." The very next morning, Boaz just happens to find himself at the town gate, which in that culture was sort of like our town hall. It was where all the official business took place, all the official legal and financial transactions, where the town elders would gather together and they would vote on things. And so the next day, Boaz just happens to find himself at the town gate, and the very man who's the closer relative just happens to be walking by, and Boaz says, "Why don't you come on over here for a second and let's talk." Now, is this coincidence? I don't think it is. Because we've actually seen this happen in the book of Ruth before. Remember back in chapter 2, let me read you this verse from chapter 2, verse 3, when Ruth first went out to the fields. It says this, it says, "So Ruth went out and entered a field and began to glean behind the harvesters. And as it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech." Elimelech was the name of Naomi's deceased husband. Now, is this coincidence as well? And the Hebrew is actually interesting. The book of Ruth was originally written in Hebrew. And if you look at the words, they put these two words together that can be translated different ways. It can be translated as, it just happened by chance. Just by luck, Ruth found herself, you know. She just happened to be one day in the field that happened to be owned by this man who happened to be a distant relative of theirs and who happened to be one of the most gracious and generous men probably living in Bethlehem at that time. You see, I think what we need to learn through this story is that God is at work even in the details of our lives, even in the things that may seem like random coincidences or chance happenings. Because God was orchestrating things in the life of Naomi and Ruth to ensure that His plan for them and His desires and His will for them would actually take place. And for them, that might have been hard to see because their lives have been so tough. And for them, they probably had just looked at all the bad stuff. And remember, Naomi comes back and she says, "Well, God has just given me nothing but setback after setback and loss after loss." And yet, here these things happen, seemingly by chance. And now we look back and we say, no. It's almost like the narrator of the story, and we don't know who's narrating it. We don't know if Ruth later was the one who wrote it down or someone else wrote it down. But it's almost like the narrator doesn't want to come right out and say, God actually led Ruth to that field and led Boaz to see her that day and take compassion on her. And God actually led Boaz to the town gate the next day, you know, and the closer, you know, possible kinsman redeemer came walking along. The narrator doesn't go that far. I think the narrator, all of us, wants us to understand that, to see that, to read into it that God is actually working behind the scenes here, even in the littlest details of their lives. Which leads me to ask the question, do I look at my life that way? Like, am I going to go home tonight? Are you going to go home tonight and think back on your day today and think about just maybe some of the random encounters you had with people, conversations, somebody you maybe bumped into, something that happened. And are you going to look back on that and say, I wonder if God was at work in that. I wonder if God was doing something significant. Or are you going to wake up tomorrow morning and before you go to work or before you go to school or before you go to the gym or the store or wherever, are you going to ask the question, God, would you open my eyes today so that when I just happen to have a conversation with someone that I might write off as just normal routine, you know, details kind of thing, or I might bump into somebody, or something might happen that I would be so easy to write off. Will you open my eyes? Because just maybe you're going to cross my path with somebody that you want me to talk to. Just maybe you're going to do something, even in the details of my life, that if I've got the eyes to see it, could make a huge difference. Do we have that kind of perspective? And hear me right, some people can take this way too far. Like, so when you're at the mall and the parking lot's packed and the parking spot opens up right in front, did God do that for you? You know, no, he did not. He didn't do that. God doesn't do stuff like that. I think. I don't know. Maybe he did. But so we can't take this too far. But the truth is, are we willing to have that perspective that maybe God is sometimes at work even in the random things that happen in our lives? Because I think that's the perspective Boaz had. Because when he saw Ruth that day, I think he had that perspective. He knew she's here for a reason, and I need to take care of her. I need to look out for her because God has brought her into my life. And when he was at the town gate that day and the closer possible redeemer walked by, I think Boaz had that perspective. He said, you know what? This is significant. Something significant is about to happen. Do we have the eyes to see that God is at work, even in the details of our lives? Now, the story moves on, and Boaz grabs this guy, and he pulls him over, and he basically says, Naomi's about to lose her land. This distant relative of ours named Naomi, the creditors are going to have to take it away from her, or she's being forced to sell it. We don't know the details. But guess what? You could, according to the laws of Israel that we all know, you could come in and you could be a redeemer for her. You could actually purchase this land and take care of her in this situation for her. Would you be willing to do that? And the man basically says, sure, I'll do it. No problem. Not a big deal. And this is where Boaz's character comes through, because then he comes back to the man and he realizes that it's not just really about land. That's not what God is calling us to do. The letter of the law says that you have the opportunity to redeem this land, but the truth is they don't just need land redeemed. They need their entire lives redeemed. And so if you're going to come in and help out this situation and do something about it, you've got to come in and not just redeem the land, you've got to actually redeem Ruth herself. And so he comes back to the man, and it says this in verse 5. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. Now, I know this sounds a little weird, and it's remember, this is sort of patriarchal ancient culture, like you acquire, you know, Ruth, like she's just a possession. But that's not what Boaz is trying to do. Basically, he's saying, look, in front of everybody, he puts the man on the spot and he says, look, if you really want to take care of this family, if you really want to step in and be the kind of redeemer that God has called you to be in their lives, it's not just about acquiring this land for them and making sure that they've got it. It's about coming in and marrying Ruth and taking her to be your wife and then having children with her so that she's got a family to pass on, because they had no more family left. There was going to be no one left to even pass the land to. So what good was land for them if there wasn't a future and a family and a hope? And so Boaz puts this guy on the spot. And he says, you know, are you going to do it? And the guy says, I don't know. And he begins to count the cost. Because that's a lot bigger deal than just buying back a little bit of land. You know, like, I mean, that's a little bit bigger deal than just writing the check and saying, yeah, I'll take care of the land. Because now he's suddenly, you want me to marry Ruth? Like this poor Moabite, the people that we hate, them, you know, woman who's barren, who for all we know is probably infertile and can't even have children to begin with. I need to marry her. And you see, as the man begins to count the cost, he realizes he doesn't want to do it. And there's no way like I can put myself in his situation. Like, this is such a foreign cultural concept that's so strange. And yet, if I put myself in that situation, I think I would probably be just like the man. Because the truth is, like, when people have problems and they bring their problems to me, like, I want to give them an easy fix. And if I can just write a little check, if I've got some extra money, I can write a check and say, here, hopefully this will cover it, you know, will that do it? Or if I can say, you know, come on, let's figure out a quick solution and take care of this and, you know, on your way. And like, I'm totally willing to get involved if that's the case. But most of the problems we have in life, they don't have easy fixes. Like, writing a check isn't going to take care of it. Like, just a little solution, go do this and tomorrow everything will be fine. That usually doesn't work. And I think Boaz realized that. And he knew that there was no short-term fix to redeeming not just this land, but this family. And I think what he knew, and it's the thing that I think we need to learn as well, is that God works also in our sacrifices. And so Boaz was willing to make the sacrifice. He was willing to take Ruth as his wife. He probably already had another wife. He probably already had another family. And back then, having multiple wives was a little more accepted. And we can talk about that some other time. And Jason or Stephen will preach on that and explain what's going on there. But the truth is, these guys probably already had families. They probably already had wives. They had their own inheritance. And so now, taking on this, and if they even had more sons and children with Ruth, then the inheritance they passed along to their existing sons would actually become smaller. So this was a huge cost, a huge sacrifice. And yet Boaz says, I'm willing to make that sacrifice. Because God works in our sacrifices. And God was working through the sacrifice of Boaz to redeem Ruth and ultimately to redeem Naomi as well. And so the man says, you know what? I will relinquish my rights. Even though I'm the closer relative, even though I'm the person that has the right, I will give that up. You can be the person. And so in front of all the witnesses, in front of all the town elders, and there's some strange customs that they do to kind of solidify and sign on the dotted line and make it happen, Boaz says, I will redeem the land and I will redeem Ruth and marry her. And all the people rejoice and all the people praise the character of Boaz. And all the people, you know, say, may God richly bless you and what you've done. May God give you many, many children like Rachel and Leah, and they name all of these Old Testament women who had many, many children. Now, at this point, I think there's one other thing that we can learn from this story, and I think it's maybe the most important thing we could learn out of every week that we've looked at this story. Because it's not found in the details, it's found in stepping back. Because the truth is, the story of Ruth is actually just the story of the Bible itself. Because what the story of Ruth tells us is ultimately God is at work for the sake of our redemption. As I think about what Ruth must have felt when Boaz said he would redeem her, he would marry her, he would love her unconditionally in a way that she probably never felt. That is the story of the entire Bible. That's the story of what God wants to do for each one of us. You see, when we think about the word redemption, there's sort of a Christian and a religious and a biblical answer that we often give to what does the word redemption mean. And in fact, I looked it up in the dictionary, and one of the very first definitions that it gave in the dictionary was this. It said, it's on the screen, yeah. the action of saving or being saved from sin. Right there in the dictionary. That's kind of surprising. But that was one of the first definitions it gave, the action of being saved from our sin. And there's this understanding that somehow we've sinned, all humans have sinned against God, and that we're somehow now indebted to Him. And so redemption is God saying, I will take care of that debt for you. And whether you buy that or not, that's really what the New Testament teaches about what God does when He wants to redeem us. And yet, I don't think that's all there is to redemption. There's so much more to redemption than God just wanting to save us from our sin. In fact, if you look at another definition of redemption, this is what it says. It says the recovery of something that was lost. The recovery of something that was lost. And you think about Naomi and Ruth, you think about everything they lost. They lost their land. They lost their husbands. They lost their sons. In Naomi's case, in Ruth's case, she couldn't have sons. They had lost their reputation. They had lost their joy. They lost their self-worth. Because in that culture, so much of your self-worth was wrapped up in your social class, your social standing, who you were married to, how many kids you had, how big your family was, what you had accomplished. They lost their hope. Man, they had no hope. And yet Boaz comes in and he redeems all of those things. Because now they have self-worth, because they know their self-worth isn't wrapped up in whether they've got a husband or not, whether they've got children or not, whether anyone's going to care for them or not based on who they are. You see, now they've got a future. Now they've got joy. Now they've got something they can celebrate in their lives. And when I think about their story, I wonder how many of us can relate. Like, I wonder how many of us would say, yeah, I've lost a lot in the last year. Like, I've lost my job. I've lost part of my income. Maybe you've lost a loved one. Maybe you had some conflict in a relationship with a friend and you feel like you've lost a friendship. Maybe your life is so hectic, you feel like you've lost your mind. Maybe you've lost a lot in the last few years. Maybe on the outside, everything looks good and you portray a good face and you kind of make it look like everything's going well, but deep down inside, you've kind of just lost your self-worth. Because you're just wondering, like, all the stuff I've gained, all the stuff I've gotten, all the stuff that I have, all the relationships I have, like, I've got all of this stuff, and yet at the end of the day, I still don't feel very satisfied. I still feel like something's missing. I still feel just kind of empty. Or maybe you've lost your joy or your hope. Maybe there's something in your life that you have been wanting to change for a long time. And you have been praying for it, and it seems like God has not answered your prayers. And you have been hoping for it, and you've done everything you know to do to see this thing change. And yet, it just doesn't seem like it's ever going to change. And it doesn't seem like God cares, and it doesn't seem like He hears your prayers. And if you are being really honest, you probably have to say you're pretty hopeless right now. You see, if there's anything that we can learn from this story, if there's anything that we can see, if we put ourselves in the lives of Naomi and Ruth, is that God does want to redeem us. And God has sent us someone just like He sent Boaz into their lives. He sent Jesus to be our Redeemer. And that's what we celebrate at Christmas, when Jesus came into this world. As a little baby, when He took on flesh and He became a human, even as a little baby. And then He grew up and He started teaching and telling people about what God was like and how God wants to redeem all of us. And do you remember one of the first things He said when He started teaching? He stood up one day in the synagogue, and this was one of the first things he said publicly when he began teaching. He says this in Luke chapter 4, verse 18. He said, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." In other words, whatever you have lost in your life, whether it's your dignity, whether it's your hope, whether it's your faith, whether it's your joy, whether it's your money, whether it's your freedom, whether it's your sight, whatever you have lost, I have come to restore that to you. I have come to give you hope and ultimately to redeem you. And then every Easter, what do we celebrate? Jesus going to the cross, making the ultimate sacrifice to take on himself all of our sin, and not only all of our sin, but all of our hopelessness and our emptiness and our brokenness and our shattered dreams and all the junk. He took all of that on himself. And he died on the cross for us. And then the Bible tells us that 3 days later, God raised him from the dead. And what was probably one of the most hopeless situations you could think of, if you were a disciple and you put all your hope in this man, and then you saw him die on a cross and be buried in the grave, you would have lost all hope and all faith. In the most hopeless of situations, God raised him up from the dead. And the Bible says that the same power that God used to raise him from the dead is now accessible to all of us for the sake of our redemption. And all we've got to do is accept it and believe it and trust God with it. And sometimes that takes a risk, just like when Ruth went to Boaz and said, "I'm going to go out on a limb here, but would you marry me and take care of me? And I'm going to trust you." That's all that God asked for us to do, to trust him to be our Redeemer. Now, some of you probably came to a place in your life where you did that a long time ago. And you sort of once and for all put your trust in God and put your faith in Jesus and said, "I do believe this and I want you to be my Redeemer." But you know what? Redemption isn't just a one-time thing. I mean, there is this one-time decision, and yet every single day we need to be redeemed from the things that we have lost in our lives. And so my question would be to you tonight, what does God need to redeem in your life right now? Like, what is it in your life that you just need to take to God and say, "God, I can't make it anymore with this. Like, I can't deal with this anymore. I need you to redeem this." My hunch is that all of us have something in our lives that we need to take to God and say, "God, would you be my Redeemer for this?" Now, maybe you're here and you would say, "Well, I'm not even really a Christian. Like, I've still got a bunch of questions, and I kind of believe in God, but the Jesus stuff I don't know about, and I'm just still kind of asking questions." And my challenge to you tonight would be, would you consider just taking a little step of faith and trusting God to be your Redeemer? And maybe this reading this book of Ruth has been helpful. Maybe it's been more confusing. And if that's the case, that's my fault. I'm not a very good communicator for that. Don't hold it against God. Just hold it against me. Maybe you've got a good list of good reasons as to why you are just not ready to do that, or don't want to do that, or don't believe you should do that. And if that's the case, I respect that. And nobody here is going to look down on you for that, because we're all on a journey of faith and none of us have all the answers. And yet maybe you're here tonight and you don't have a good list of reasons. And if that's the case, Why not? Why not just say, God, I don't have all the answers, but I know I need to be redeemed. And I want you to be my redeemer. And so I'm just going to trust you. And I don't even know fully what that looks like. And it's risky, and I'm scared, and I don't even know where this is going to take me, but I'll trust you. Because you see, a lot of us here have done that. And we would say, yeah, it is scary, and yeah, it is risky. And yet, every time we express a little bit of trust and a little bit of faith in God, He expresses so much more trustworthiness and faithfulness back to us. So God is working in the details of our lives. We've got to open our eyes to that. God wants to work through our sacrifices. And so sometimes He's going to call us to make sacrifices. And we've got to remind ourselves, God will work through that. But ultimately, God is working for the sake of our redemption. And that's why we celebrate Him. That's why we sing songs about Him. And that is the full reason that we can have hope in Him. So would you consider going to Him to be your Redeemer? Let me close this in a word of prayer. God, I can just only imagine what Naomi and Ruth would have been going through that day when they got that news that Boaz was going to redeem them. And God, that is just something to celebrate, and it's just a picture of your love for us. So God, we want to call you our Father. For some of us, that's hard because we've never had a father that's loved us in the way you do. God, we want to call you our Redeemer because we need redeeming. Not just from our own sin, we need redemption from that for sure. But there's just junk, there's just brokenness, there's just emptiness in our lives. And we need redemption from that too, God. We need you to make us whole. And so we just thank you for what you did by sending your Son to each one of us. We celebrate Him during the season. And ultimately, we thank you for what He did on the cross and what He did when you rose Him up from the grave. There's no greater demonstration of your love for us than Jesus. So I pray that you would help us to just continue focusing on Him, worshiping Him, trusting Him, and looking to Him as our Redeemer. We pray this in your name.